This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
Support for the Memory Palace comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/memory. That's odoo.com/memory.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DiMeo. He would build a shrine to an idea. That was the idea. Or a shrine to ideas, that may have been it. Maybe the vigorous debate of ideas? Ideals with an L, certainly. Intentions are hard to divine when you look back. So maybe it's best to start at the beginning. Walter Knott had nothing. He lived out in the San Bernardino Valley, east of LA. His father died when he was little, and his mother did what she could. She was industrious. Her own parents had come out west in an honest-to-God covered wagon. But there was only so much she could do on her own. So young Walter pitched in. There was an empty lot near his school. He was 8 or 9, so this is like 1899. And Walter planted a garden there, tended it before and after school, and then sold the vegetables that sprouted up through the dirt. Took some of that money, rented out other plots and other empty lots, unused corners of neighbors' yards, grew more vegetables, made more money. And when he got older and married his high school sweetheart, they moved out to the Mojave Desert, built a house, and started working the land. Didn't get much out of the land, so he took a second job. But while other men were trying to pull the last threads of silver out of the long-defunct mines that had put that part of California on the map, Walter took a gig changing that map, ushering in a new era for California, working on the road crew that laid out what would become Route 66. Now back home, where his wife continued to work the land, if you worked that land for 3 years, the federal government would just give it to you. That's the way it worked back then. So Walter Knott went from nothing to owning a 170-acre safety net as he took the road west and tried his luck in Orange County. He started growing berries on another rented plot in a town called Buena Park, sold them in a stand by the road, took a chance and bought the land. And so he had something, had a leg up on the other farmers in the area when the Depression hit and they couldn't make their own rent. And as the big farms in the area grew, and as a new road took folks to the coast, that road went by Knott's fruit stand. He started selling chicken dinners. It was the perfect place to stop, halfway between the beach and the city. And his wife could cook. And people kept coming back, told their friends about the nice spot on Beach Boulevard in Buena Park. Nice people, a good meal, berry pies for dessert. And then there were lines, people waiting forever for 4 hours on a holiday weekend. Knott figured he'd give them something to look at while they waited to be seated. So he made a garden of rocks and ferns, converted an old tractor engine into a pump, made a working waterfall. Then he put his collection of music boxes on display, built a beehive and put it behind glass so you could watch them buzz about. Kids like that. Started a grandfather clock collection. Grandfather clock enthusiasts, I guess, like that. And then there was more. There was always more. More tables, more attractions. Not like the Old West. So he sent a fellow out to the desert with a truck and some cash to buy up every old barn, every busted-up blacksmith shop. Find him one of those doors, the kind that swings open when an outlaw comes into the saloon looking for trouble. And by the early 50s, Knott had a full-on amusement park. There were stage shows and shops and some simple rides. Walt Disney would come by sometimes when he was planning his own park in Anaheim up the road. But even Disneyland didn't slow Knott down a bit. He was making money hand over fist, even though admission was free. The restaurant was still churning out chicken dinners. He sold souvenirs, fake Native American pottery, tickets to a train you could ride through a mine made of concrete poured into chicken wire and molded to look like boulders and stalactites, and Knott's Berry Farm, Walter Knott's amusement park. And Knott's Berry Farm, Walter Knott's farm of berries, made him a fortune and a prominent man in a thriving community there between the city and the sea. When he would think back in his life, as he wandered the grounds of his living legacy, there in the 1960s, he would tell a tale of the American dream, of a self-made man who had nothing, who had to sell vegetables as a boy to be able to afford bootstraps with which to pull himself up, who built an empire one nickel berry basket, one fried chicken plate, one more ride around the ersatz mineshaft at a time, built it with nothing but his bare hands and innate ingenuity and an enterprising spirit he traced back to his pioneer forebears and to the vision of the founding fathers themselves. And the story was true, more or less. He wouldn't dwell much on the 170 acres he got from the federal government, or that he was born at the right time in the right place, with the right skin color to get those acres. But sure, a tip of the hat to Mr. Nod. Why not? But as he walked among the crowds posing for Polaroids in front of the old saloon, or throwing Roosevelt dimes in the old wishing well, he didn't like what he saw. It wasn't the park. He loved his park. It was the people. There was something wrong with these Americans. Something lazy and entitled. And when he'd go home to his ranch house, right there attached to the restaurant where it all began, and he'd see the news from Birmingham or Little Rock, see these protests, see people clamoring for civil rights, handouts, he thought, this wasn't those people's fault. The laziness, the entitlement, it was the government's. A government that had strayed so far from its animating purpose. It had bound its citizenry in chains of taxation and dependency. It had kneecapped businesses by allowing workers to organize, by forcing them to pay a minimum wage, dragged them down with regulations that protected, and he certainly would have put protected in air quotes if air quotes were a thing back then, that protected employees and customers and the environment. Civil rights legislation infringed on his civil rights. Just about any legislation, when he got down to it, was a menace to American freedom and a corruption of the founder's vision. And if that sounds familiar, sounds like a distilled form of American conservatism, circa now, thank, or not, Walter Knott, who had a lot to do with it, who started a foundation that made a couple thousand short documentaries that railed with equal fervor against communist nations for murdering dissidents, and his own nation for making people get building permits and stuff. Who gave many of his millions to conservative causes and candidates, enough to make sure they were conservative enough for Walter Knott, who helped fund the rise of Barry Goldwater in 64, who worked tirelessly to get Nixon, Orange County's own, in the White House, who helped Ronald Reagan march to the head of the Republican Party beneath a banner stitched in part by Walter Knott. But he felt he had more to give than money. Knott was a self-proclaimed fanatic for patriotism. His modest house was stuffed with the stuff of the patriot, flags and eagles, busts of presidents, paintings, portraits. He loved all of it. He drew inspiration from all of it. He couldn't get enough. So Walter Knott built his own Independence Hall. The original, in Philadelphia, was and still is a huge tourist attraction, where folks flock to see the place where the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution were debated and signed. Why should folks out west have to make some arduous pilgrimage to commune with the spirits of the founders? So up it went, across the street from his restaurant and his amusement park. He cut the ribbon in 66, on the 4th of July, of course. It was a brick-for-brick reproduction, save for a small lecture hall upstairs, and a fire exit in the back to conform to local building codes, a concession to the same sort of cruel suppression of liberty he was trying to counteract with the project in the first place. Opening day had little girls in period costumes passing out programs, Boy Scouts, and a choir, and pealing bells and patriotic songs and prayers that rang out to warn those who would restrict a man's freedom to opt out of paying Social Security payroll taxes, or make baby blankets that catch on fire, or refuse service to people based on the color of their skin, or build exact replicas of 18th century buildings using 20th century safety standards. Knott's idea was that people would come from all over. They'd walk the halls. They'd stand in the very room, or a room that looked just like the very room, where Jefferson and Franklin and Hamilton and the like had figured it all out. They would listen to a recording of voice actors debating as they once did right there, or in a place that looked just like right there, but was right there in Orange County. School groups would come. Kids would be inspired. They'd grow up better than those young people protesting the war, marching for civil rights. They'd grow up right and respectful. They wouldn't be entitled or lazy. They'd believe in freedom and free enterprise. Better than the hippies, the place was suddenly crawling with hippies. Not even started charging admission in 68 to try to keep out the hippies, in Associated Pincos. His Independence Hall wouldn't be a tourist attraction. It would be an antidote. Because Walter Knott figured, how could you leave that shrine to freedom without coming away with Walter Knott's exact ideas about freedom? How could you listen to the Founding Fathers? Voice actors portraying the Founding Fathers, sure, but these were good actors, engaged in a spirited debate about how best to craft a system that would allow for spirited debate and pluralism and free expression and differing opinions and differing ways of living, and not come away with Walter Knott's exact opinion about how to live your life. I think that was the idea. A beacon of freedom in Buena Park. And for some years, it was at least a rallying point. Ronald Reagan would come to speak against communism and the tyranny of big government and taxation. The Liberty Bell would ring, replica crack and all. John Wayne made a TV special there. They crowned Miss Orange County there. And people came for quite a while. They paid to get in, they listened to the debates, and to a pre-recorded speech in which they were told that a free people must be ever vigilant against a government that would strip away their liberty. Walter Knott died in December of 81. He lived a long time, long enough to see his friend Ronald Reagan become president and know his ideas had a champion in the White House. 15-20 years later, the family sold everything off to an amusement park conglomerate in Ohio. But his Independence Hall still stands. People don't really go there anymore, even though they stopped charging admission some years ago. They might stumble in from time to time while looking for the Peanuts gift shop or the TGI Fridays, or can't remember which lot they parked in. But still it stands, his monument to liberty and free enterprise unfettered by a water park called Soak City, where the price of admission guarantees that a proud American over 42 inches tall can float in a tube on the gentle currents of the Lazy River and go round and round as many times as they please and gaze up at Independence Hall and think about freedom. This episode of The Memory Palace was written and produced by me, Nate DeMeo, with research assistance from Eliza McGraw and engineering assistance from Elizabeth Aubert. We get our ad music from J.D. Sampson. We get ad serving technology from AdZerk. The show is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Radiotopia is the home to many of the finest podcasts in the land, including Radio Diaries. For more than 20 years, they've been giving people tape recorders and working with them to report on their own lives and stories. They are masters of this freaking craft. They have a brand new series on the podcast called Last Witness. These are portraits of the last surviving witnesses to important moments in history, including a recent one, the story of 95-year-old Russell Gockenbach, who flew as a navigator on the mission to bomb Hiroshima. If you check out that episode, you'll find that powerful story, paired with an old favorite from the Memory Palace. Check out Radio Diaries and all the other fine radio programs from Radiotopia at radiotopia.fm. And in the meantime, if you want to hit me up, you can get me at nate@thememorypalace.us or on Twitter or Facebook at The Memory Palace. Radiotopia.